This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Mario Hyland. He's a senior vice president at a company called Aegis.net Incorporated, and you can find them at AEGIS.net. Good morning, Mario. How are you?
Good morning, and thank you, John.
Geez, you know, you can't pick up a newspaper or go to a website without, you know, people talking about healthcare IT. I mean, you get bombarded in the radio and TV, and my kids are even talking about it and arguing about it with the election coming up and whatnot. Thought I'd bring in the studio, and I thought we'd take a look at, you know, health information technology from maybe a nuts and bolts perspective of someone who's been down in the trenches, gotten beaten up and picked himself up and got beat up again, and maybe has learned some lessons for our audience, and perhaps you can share with us some of your successes and some of your failures, and maybe our listeners can maybe derive some information from your background. And that's what I'd like to start off with. Maybe you can tell us about your background, Mario, and how you wound up working for a company called Aegis.net.
Oh, thank you, John. Health IT today is definitely a growing industry, and it's probably one of the industries in the U.S. that's going to see the most margin of growth in the next 5 to 10 years. The challenges, as we watch, many of the federal agencies are moving quickly forward with implementing health IT initiatives. My involvement started with health IT, and I've always seen health IT come across in different ways, but supporting the payer organizations, the Blue Cross Blue Shield, the Big Blues, Aetna, and others. Over the past 5 to 10 years, many of these organizations have implemented IT solutions to support claims processing, to be able to support third-party adjudication in regards to fraud and different challenges with ensuring that the proper claims are being paid. These initiatives have depended on health systems being automated and implemented with the latest technology for a number of years. And they've seen this help the coordination of care, Kaiser Permanente as an example, where that organization works very hard to have the full suite of health care professionals that someone would need during their time in regards to managing that coordination of care from somebody being admitted to an emergency situation or a primary care physician with a diagnosis through their treatment and eventually being cured. So we can clearly see that health IT plays a role in those organizations, making sure they are able to care for individuals, and that is definitely where health IT is going.
Great. I went to your website this morning, AEGIS.net, and it kind of a tagline there. It says, ensuring health IT solution interoperability for the 21st century. Sounds like Buzz Lightyear or something. I mean, that's quite a challenge, I'd say. So your company works in the area of interoperability. Perhaps you can define that. And I think people listening know, geez, the VA's got something going on and the Govy's got something going on. And there's a lot of different facets to this area of interoperability. From the medical, you know, from the health IT perspective, what are the big mountains out there?
So you'll hear a lot of organizations right now talking about the electronic medical record and formerly the electronic health record. The electronic health record initiative is to help automate and get medical organizations to move away from paper medical records into electronic format. This is the first stage, allowing organizations like doctor's offices and hospitals be able to store their information electronically. Following specifications and standards set out by the industry, will begin to afford them the first step. You'll hear items like meaningful use, which are coming out of the Office of the National Coordinator, Health IT, ONC, part of HHS, and being worked with the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, CMS. Meaningful use wants to drive towards quality, improving quality of care. To do that, we need to be able to, in an electronic way, coordinate that care information, which is basically embedded within the EMRs and the EHRs. We need to be able to move this information from one provider organization to another provider organization, or follow the patient as they're going through their medical treatments. So interoperability seeks to address how we will move electronic information, specifically around electronic health records.
You know, I don't want to paint too bleak a picture here, but they ain't the only game in town. I mean, there are other organizations that have to transfer different types of electronic information. The two biggest analogies, I think, are the banking industry. You got to transfer information between banks. And look about our friends at the FBI. They must exchange information for FBI. So, I mean, it's not the first time in the history of the world that someone's had to accomplish this, is it?
Absolutely. And I think that everybody is comfortable today with respect to going up to an ATM machine and putting in their card. You know, if they personally need money for some reason and it's not one of their banks, they still feel relatively comfortable today.
Paris, Virginia, or Paris, France.
Exactly. And in doing that, they have gained in their confidence that the banking industry securely protects their financial information and allows them to exchange monies. They can get money out of an ATM even if it's not their own bank or branch that they're dealing with. So you're absolutely right. Interoperability in that sense has been well defined, well implemented, and has reached the American people and is now trusted. The FBI, as you're speaking about, recently the FBI, as of April 2012, no longer will accept paper fingerprint cards. They've moved electronic. But before we talk about some of the complexities with health IT interoperability, let's look at the FBI's challenge with fingerprints. Well, we have two hands. We have four fingers on each hand, and we have a thumb and our palm. There's a relatively finite number of pieces of information which electronically need to be transferred. With the proper procedures, training, and systems in place with the specifications and standards, the FBI has gotten to a reliability of about 3% failure or error rate. With the electronic version. That is compared with 30% with the paper version. So definitely that is the right move with electronic fingerprints. And that meets the challenge of interoperability. But when we look at health IT interoperability, that's a more complicated animal.
But I think there's been success with the FBI, there's success with the banking world. So the healthcare IT professionals that are out there, and many of them are in the organizations called HIMSS, they shouldn't be on suicide watch. They should be on watch for figuring out how this all works.
Absolutely. And let me describe to you how HIMSS, and we're an active member of HIMSS, and we definitely believe in their mission.
Yeah, that's not church work. It's HIMSS.
And HIMSS stands for the Health Information Management Systems Society. The HIMSS works with an organization called IHE. IHE seeks to define standards and specifications. They support and work with the SDOs, the Standards Development Organizations, to put together profiles around different exchanges of information. It is those specifications and standards which have been adopted by the Office of the National Coordinator, the Nationwide Health Information Exchange, the NWIN, as it's called today, but it's moving towards the term the exchange. That organization needed to standardize, and they used IHE as underlying technologies, specifications, and standards for patient discovery, query for document, and retrieve document. These efforts to standardize interoperability will allow organizations and federal agencies like the Department of Defense, the Department of Veteran Affairs, and Social Security Administration, in a secure manner, reliably exchange information that are part of what is going to be health IT in the future.
It's all involved with carefully changing information. I'm thinking about Google keywords, and if you had keyworded HIE, Health Information Exchange, 3 years ago, you'd get no hits. But just let me tell you something, just in the last 60 days, I'll bet that's a hockey stick. For now, all of a sudden, yeah, Mario's my good buddy. I want Mario to come over for dinner on Thursday night because I'm getting killed trying to understand this.
There is a lot of different initiatives going on right now. With the EMRs and the EHRs' success, as far as being able to, we've doubled the number of doctors' offices and hospital organizations that have implemented or are in the final stages of implementing EMRs and EHRs. However, I want everyone to realize that implementing an EMR and an EHR does not necessarily guarantee you interoperability.
We guarantee you we'll take a break and come back, talk more about Health Information Exchange and about Aegis. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Mario Hyland. He is a Senior Vice President at Aegis.net Incorporated. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Mario Hyland. He's the Senior Vice President at a company called Aegis.net. If you're playing along at home, that's AEGIS.net. And their focus is on working with healthcare IT systems to make them operate together. Basically, one system can communicate with another system, and there's a lot of different systems to worry about. And one question I think I have is the old Tom Cruise question of, show me the money. Well, who's paying for this, and how does this all work? If the end here is to save money in electronic medical records, how do we accomplish that, Mario? Perhaps you can give us a little framework on how that all takes place.
The Health and Human Services were a part of the ARA initiative. There's approximately $25 billion set aside for HHS to help move forward health IT. And in those initiatives, the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, ONC, acts as the custodial agent to a number of those initiatives, specifically the grants program. The Beacon Grants, as an example, are a group of organizations that have been awarded some money to implement health IT, as well as the state HIEs are currently being funded by ONC to get their state organizations up and running and to ensure health information is being exchanged within the state. The ONC, the Office of the National Coordinator, the current national coordinator, Farzad Mosheshari, touts Meaningful Use's goal of helping to bridge or form that pathway of allowing care coordination between organizations. And really, when you look at what ONC is trying to do along with CMS is defining meaningful use, it really is to try to help organizations ensure that they have the most accurate medical information, and at the point of care, that information that is contained within the longitudinal record is brought together. But let's look at why sort of financial concerns play a part in health IT.
I think it's expensive right now to exchange healthcare information. I mean, I don't think people realize that. Expensive now. Any way to attempt to standardize this or make it more interoperable is going to save money just in effect.
Absolutely. And when you look at healthcare in the U.S. right now, the U.S. GDP is about $15 trillion, 2010, 2011, annualized. And in doing that, if you compare that against the cost that the U.S. is spending on medical care, it's about $8,000 per capita. We're number one in the world on spending for health IT, not in the quality of care delivered by health IT, the quality of care delivered in our healthcare systems, but number one in spending. And if we look at that, if we could go, that amounts to approximately 17% of the GDP, or about $2.5 trillion a year being spent on being spent on healthcare right now. If we could go to the number two position on spending, but still work on improving the quality of care, we would save almost $1 trillion a year in healthcare costs. Well, how would we do that? What would be some of the areas? The CMS has done some studies on fraud, waste, and abuse, and their reports have indicated there is the potential to save between $350 billion in a 10-year period. Other experts have evaluated the report and said it could be 10 times that amount. But with health interoperability, with health IT, if organizations are interoperating, if SSA and CMS are able to interoperate with the doctor's office and validate benefits and validate procedures and care at the point of service, then we're going to see that. It's not the most critical aspect of meaningful use. Certainly the coordination of care and delivering better quality of care, those metrics are captured in meaningful use, and they're part of stage one and stage two, eventually a five-stage process. So all of those things are important. But when you look at the agencies justifying why they're making the move to health IT, there is a financial component, and there is a huge incentive. If we can remove fraud, waste, and abuse from our healthcare system in the U.S., we will see a tremendous savings, one that will ultimately pay for the development of health IT.
If we draw the parallel with fingerprints, for example, and the weaknesses of some paper-based systems. I mean, if I go to Ohio in August and I'm in a triathlon and I fall and scrape my leg and they take me to the Cleveland Clinic, they're going to ask me all kinds of half-hour questions. I mean, if there's some way they could know, oh, yeah, this guy's diabetic or this guy has got problems with his kidney or something, I mean, it would save money. It would make life easier. I think that's the whole objective here is what's one way one can save money? Well, Americans move a lot. They travel a lot. They go from company to company to company. And how can – I mean, look, if in five companies in the last 10 years, how would I keep a record of all those medical procedures that took place? I mean, it's mystifying. I don't know how people do it. I guess they do it by paper now. I don't know how else they do it.
A number of individuals in America will maintain their own paper copy. The Department of Veteran Affairs allows people to verify the medical information that they have with the Blue Button program.
Finally.
Part of the My Healthy Vet program. And the initiative, as you spoke of, is under, referred to in the industry as a glass break. It's an emergency event that happens outside of your normal area when a healthcare organization like a hospital may not be able to communicate with you if you're in an ER.
I could be unconscious.
So those are one of the use cases that we're trying to develop systems around that will be able to answer that call. And health interoperability is key. Allowing that hospital to, with little information that they can from your driver's license and other pieces of information that you may have available, or people who are with you, be able to reach out across America to be able to find out where you were treated and what types of treatment you received. That information is absolutely essential to your medical providers in determining whether you have drug allergies, interactions, whether you've had recent surgeries, whether you have a pacemaker, as an example. They want that information available to them so that they can make the best decisions as to your treatment and care at that point you need it.
You know, just last week, my wife's starting to use her smartphone as an alarm clock right next to the bed. And she's sitting there with her Nook on, and she's got her smartphone, everything going on, all kinds of mobile devices out there. I was just at Todd Park's Datapalooza talking about apps and mobile devices. From the perspective of something like mobile devices, interoperability is, guess what, center stage as well.
Absolutely. And as you're dealing with mobile devices, security becomes a great concern. To address this, HIMSS has started a chapter related to HIMSS Mobile, and we're working with them. So definitely mobile devices. The federal government is working on bring your own devices within many of the federal agencies. We've seen that at the IAC Management of Change, where they were talking about BYOD and how the FedRAMP and other initiatives are going to have to be able to support that. In doing so, though, as we talk about the information being PHI, protected health information, and PII, privacy around HIPAA, so we need to make sure those mobile devices are also secure in that if we lose them or they're no longer in our control, that data can't be compromised. But mobile devices are definitely a wave that is here to stay, and it is part of how our medical practitioners are going to be conveying and working with us as patients.
I'm a lot older than you, Mario. I can remember years ago when people would drag in $4,000 personal computers into work so they could have their own spreadsheet. And then guy next door to you, and then girl next door to you, and all of a sudden the IT guy goes, oh no, what about security? I hope this isn't reenacted with mobile devices here. It seems like I see so many people bringing them in, and folks like you are saying, wait, but they don't want to wait, do they?
The speed at which this is happening is incredible. As you said, 6 months ago, was talking about interoperability and health IT might not have the initiative that it has today. But definitely we've seen concern is there to ensure that it is secure. And I can personally attest to the interoperability, the systems that we're working with at ONC and the exchange, when they share information on those networks, the information is very secure. But making sure that that information all the way out to the mobile devices is secure will continue to be a challenge. It can be addressed. Technology is there. We just need to ensure that it is implemented and installed correctly.
And it's not easy when you have physicians bringing in devices or surgeons. Now, if a surgeon brings in a device, who is going to argue with a surgeon? I'm sure not. I've seen surgeons. These are tough guys to battle with as far as information security goes. Mario, we're going to take a break. We come back, we'll talk about this concept called a developer's integration lab to test out ways systems can be found out if they actually interoperate or not. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Mario Hyland, Senior Vice President at Aegis.net Incorporated. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Mario Hyland, Senior Vice President at a company called Aegis.net Incorporated. You can go to their website at AEGIS.net. For all you classical scholars out there, you know what their reference is. It makes perfect sense. If you know, I'll be writing about this in my blog. You folks have a blog there? I know you've written for different organizations. What kind of blog do you have, Mario?
We support the blogs that we're working on right now at Aegis are one around health interoperability, but also around process improvement. We feel that organizations, 5 minutes to process improvement is one of our initiatives, and Bill Fox leads that. So we're blogging on how to improve process and making sure that you develop systems and or implement systems according to your plan. So 5 minutes of process improvement is definitely one of our major blogs. But health interoperability, we're just getting started on it and helping people understand some of their challenges that we've seen over the past 2 to 3 years supporting the Office of the National Coordinator as a contractor with ONC. One of my responsibilities is to try to help ensure that interoperability is met as organizations like the federal partners are rolling out. They want to make sure that they're able to interoperate with each other, and we support that.
And if you didn't study Greek in college, I'm sure many listeners have studied Greek. That's AEGIS.net. And the classical scholars are all laughing at me now, but that's I have to repeat that because people are going, Aegis, they'll type in two E's and get all confused. I'll be blogging about this at my company site, Armature Blog. You can type in my name and find it. That's awful easy to find. I'm thinking that many of my listeners may comment on the blog or call me up or grab me by the throat and go, hey, John, you know, this guy talked about the money. That's great. He talked about the technology. That's great. Show me really, how do you do this? If you have 10 systems, how can you test if 10 systems are going to work with 10 other systems? How do you test 20 systems with 15 other systems? If you look at the VA, they have one way to skin the cat. Look at the govies, they have another way to skin the cat. And then, wait a minute, the Marine Corps has got a different way to skin the cat. How do you do this? I mean, is this a magic formula? Or what is the, put this in working boots, Mario. How does someone test interoperability?
Well, and in fact, you hit the nail on the head, interoperability. It's between organizations. Whereas most IT challenges that people face within a single CIO or single CTO or organization, they're able to mandate the technologies. Well, when you're interoperating organization to organization, one hospital system to another, you can't mandate what the technology is. You have to center around something like a standard, a specification. Back to HIMSS, IHE specifications, their profiles around the nationwide health information, the NWHIN. Have standards and specifications written that document how interoperability is to occur. These challenges can be met technically, but what we need to do is help organizations understand that they need to test these systems. Testing a system that interoperates between organizations is definitely a challenge because of the logistics.
Of course. So what you folks have done, you developed your own kind of a lab called the DIL, is that right? Developers Integration Lab.
Yes, we're working with and trying to help organizations who understand the need for testing interoperability, gateway to gateway. basically, in the technical world, an organization that wants to interoperate, move electronic medical information from their system to another, either in a responder scenario or an initiator scenario, they need to do so through their technical gateway. That gateway needs to talk to other organizations and other gateways. The best way to ensure that their gateway is interoperating is to be able to test that. You want to test it gateway to gateway. There are differing approaches. Some will talk about using smaller tools like SOAP UI and small test cases. The Developers Integration Lab is a self-service, bidirectional, unattended lab, which would allow a developer working late at night, Saturday at 11:30, making a last-minute change and wants to ensure that their gateway, they haven't introduced any interoperability issues. They want to execute a series of tests, and they don't want to wait until a peer of theirs at another organization comes in and is available, or setting up a conference call, or going through log files. They want to be able to do it in an unattended way. They want to execute a test, review the results, and see if they pass or fail against the specifications. That's critical when you're talking about hundreds of organizations wanting to do this. Having a testing approach and a testing solution that will scale and allow all these different organizations simultaneously to be able to test as needed is going to be something that this country needs as we move forward.
I'm thinking of A to A is simple, okay? What about A to B, C, D? That's simple. What about when there's load balancing involved? Well, all of a sudden, the variables here, I mean, we can get out the math and go, wait a minute, the variables here are getting tricky. A to B, and B is varying. Okay, A to B to C, and that C is varying. I mean, it can be a very critical, it can be a very difficult algorithm to come together. But you've done it with your integration lab, huh?
Absolutely. And the integration lab is definitely, it's designed for the 21st century of how to test interoperability. With the initiatives to support the NWHIN, there is the Connect Open Source Initiative, which we're a member of and we definitely support. There's also the Direct Project, which as part of Meaningful Use is going to help accelerate how organizations are going to be able to exchange information at the doctor's offices and to the pharmacies. Those are some of the use cases that the Direct Project seeks to address. In doing that, you want to make sure that those messages are secure and that they can get through. So as you said, and when you look at the enterprise approach to how to build interoperability and allow those gateways to scale across the VA, that's looking at 100,000 plus transactions per day, and
wow,
the Department of Defense.
Scaling right there.
Absolutely. So we want to make sure that our testing approaches will allow not only large organizations with hundreds of thousands of messages to be able to communicate, but all of the other organizations that may want to determine if they update a JVM or update the web service stack. These are very technical terms, but they all impact or potentially impact interoperability. You do not want to find interoperability issues in production when there's a point of care or a clinical event that is being handicapped because of this.
If you get in your car and drive 270, you see that big, beautiful campus for NIST. And NIST is integral to all this because NIST helps develop some of these standards. Are they kind of a key component here, one of the parts of the matrix?
Absolutely. And the HITECH Act specifically calls out the Department of Commerce. ONC's ARRA funding specifically set aside money for the Department of Commerce. And as you know, NIST is a part of the Department of Commerce. NIST's responsibility, and they have multiple, they write the specifications as far as how test labs get accredited. So organizations like CCHIT that are an accredited testing body for the ONC around health IT and the EMRs and the EHRs. But NIST's responsibility is to help develop some of these testing tools. They have tools that are used at events like the HIMSS IHE Connectathon in Chicago in January. Those tools are used to ensure conformance of the messages. The challenge around interoperability, though, is it faces different technology stacks. Different organizations run their enterprise on different technologies, like whether it's an IBM technology or an Oracle technology or an open source initiative. You want to, at all times, ensure that you're able to interoperate. And that interoperability means that you need to have an environment that can scale and be able to quickly test out new technologies as they come down.
If you're listening to this interview and there's snow on the ground and you're wondering where to find out more information, you present at several conferences. One, you've talked about HIMSS before, but in the summer, June timeframe is usually the government IT health conference, isn't it? And that's a good place. You know, you're listening to this and trying to learn more. You can actually go sit in a room and watch some of this interoperability take place, maybe even see a demo of this lab. I mean, this is, if you run 200 virtual servers on a lab, you can go in a back of the room and sit and watch. Oh, I see what he's doing. Gets a better idea of what's going on here.
Absolutely. The HIMSS supports the interoperability showcase. So any of the events, any of the HIMSS events, whether it's the, you know, recently got back from Copenhagen, Denmark with the World Health IT event, that's the HIMSS reaching out to at the global level. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But the HIMSS has the annual event and they have the event here in Washington, D.C. Called Government Health IT. So those types of events are definitely where people can start to see how interoperability and how organizations are. And I definitely recommend you visit the Interoperability Showcase to learn more.
Because I'm all for reading white papers, but with this type of a product, with this type of a system, you really have to see it to understand it. I mean, there's a limitation here with radio and with white papers, but I think these conferences actually let people who are 10 times as smart as I, who are charged with integrating systems together, can see the value of this thing you called a DIL or Developers Integration Lab. When we come back, we'll talk more about tweeting and Twitter feeds and give you my special nerdology test. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Mario Hyland. He is a senior vice president at a company called Aegis.net Incorporated. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Mario Hyland, senior vice president at a company called Aegis.net. That's AEGIS.net for more information. If you want to tweet him, tweet the company. My Twitter handle is at Ray Gilray, and the company Twitter handle is at AEGISNET. You might be able to follow and see what's going on, see what kind of events they participate in. The event today, though, is my 10-question test to see if you're a card-carrying nerd or not, Mario. We'll find out. Here's the questions. Are you ready for them?
Yes, sir.
First question. Year you bought your first computer?
My first computer was a Grid, bought in 1991.
That's respectable. Year your first cell phone?
First cell phone, 1993. It was a Motorola.
Mm-hmm. And you have a Twitter? You have a personal Twitter feed?
My personal Twitter is at InteropGuy.
InteropGuy. Well, I like that one. And do you have a personal blog or company blog?
Company, Twitter, the at Aegis.net, and Aegis is our primary blog. We navigate out there a lot of our ideas around challenges.
Do you have any online personal backup that you use?
No, I don't use online backup. We have a very strong infrastructure enterprise class that does all of our backups.
We got our own. Is that your answer? We got our own. What kind of smartphone do you use?
I'm still a BlackBerry carrier. I like the BlackBerry platform. Works with BES, but that may be changing soon.
That's a fair statement. Number of apps on your BlackBerry?
17.
So, whoa, a specific number there. What kind of tablet device do you own?
Carry an iPad. I believe that the user interface is great. I believe in the Apple technology. I think it's pretty cool.
What type of social networking sites do you participate in?
LinkedIn primarily. While I have a Facebook account, I rarely use it.
Me too, yeah.
But LinkedIn, I believe in working with my professional network.
And the last book you read was electronic or paper?
Electronic. I like audiobooks a lot. I'll do that as I navigate my drives. But I do have a number of different electronic books that I read, but I do not have a Nook or those types.
It looks like you're a middling score here. I once had a fellow in the studio here, and I asked about his first computer, and he talked about the serial number of the Apple II that he had. I mean, that was quite an answer. I don't know if he was
my first exposure to computers in Northern Ontario was in my high school when I was in grade 9. The the computer teacher at the time believed in PDP and digital decks. PDP 1144.
I remember him very well.
He chose that over the Commodore PETs and the Ataris because he felt that they weren't really computing.
There were debates about what exactly a computer was back then, but that was a different day, different time, all kinds of day. Debates we have today is for exchanging information between organizations back and forth. We talked about this earlier in the show, and I'm sure there are listeners who are network managers or systems engineers, and they're thinking about this going, okay, tell me about this lab thing. I mean, how many hundreds of different servers do you have set up communicating with how many others? I mean, tell us more about this.
With the challenge being health interoperability and allowing organizations to be able to interoperate, the challenge really is organization to organization. You're no longer in charge of or in control of the different environments that may be running out there. Backwards compatibility is always a challenge. As you move your organization forward, your trading partners and other organizations that you securely share electronic information with may not be on your timetable as far as moving forward. So you need to be concerned about how backwards compatibility will be handled. In order to support testing interoperability, you really need to be able to replicate an environment that will test out these different stacks. You want to find out a problem before it gets to production, before something finds its way into everyday use, or that a clinical event is interrupted because of a lack of interoperability.
I keep thinking of that probe they're sending to Mars. Boy, they tested that a million times before they sent it off, didn't they? I'm sure they did. But the same is true for my listeners. Before they commit to any kind of interoperability, they just want to have a hint that it might work.
Absolutely. And testing interoperability. Well, you can test conformance. Does the message conform with the standard and the specification? That's a relatively easy test. Difficult with health IT because of the number of different components. The structure of these messages are very complicated. The transport layer and how a secure connection between organizations are created, that in itself needs to be tested. There is an organization out there, a standards development organization, OASIS, that contributes the SAML, the Security Access Markup Language. SAML is a part of the assertion block that protects the message to ensure that it's only delivered to the organization that it's intended and to the person for the purpose it's intended. Well, those SAML assertions and how they work along with the web services need to be tested in multiple different stacks, whether you're an IBM stack or an Oracle stack, and whether you're using today's version or yesterday's version or tomorrow's version.
So my listeners can go to your website and maybe send you a tweet or ask and say, look, Redskins are playing, it's getting, the leaves are changing color, and I'm trying to, you know, test out different operating systems, multiple operating systems. Can you do that? Yes. Okay. What about FIPS versus non-FIPS? Can you do that? Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of different checkboxes here that people can contact your company and go, no, I don't care about Windows versus Linux. I just care about FIPS. Tell me about FIPS. So you can drill down that well with these virtual servers that are running.
Absolutely. And you're exactly demonstrating why the Developers Integration Lab, in that when you start to combine all of these different variables, which operating system, does it include FIPS, is it Java or .NET, you really need to be able to simulate all those types of environments in order to truly test interoperability. Example, one of those stacks is a web service stack, is part of the Apache program, CXF. CXF had, we were doing some testing with CXF and we ran into an MTOM issue. This is with the Department of Veteran Affairs. They were looking to exchange information with one of their trading partners, and it was critical. It was they needed to resolve this interoperability issue, and we worked with them to solve this MTOM issue, and that is in production right now. We don't want these issues to be found at such a late stage, just before going live. We'd rather find them earlier so that we can work with Apache and help correct CXF as a web service stack so that it's able to interoperate with all the other services out there.
It's getting towards the end of the show. I'm going to use this very fancy phrase here, and I'm not trying to impress any listeners, but when I do my research for this program, I learned about something called semantic interoperability. It seems like this is the long-term goal in general for this. Could you maybe describe that for some more of our advanced listeners?
The semantic interoperability, once an organization is able to exchange electronic medical information with another, the next component of that is called the payload, is to make sure that the information is provided in a way that the person receiving it can actually consume and use it. C32s and consolidated CDAs are the approach the industry is using to ensure semantic interoperability. It's one thing to ask for a document or demonstrate that we can exchange patient information. It won't be a good day if what we exchange is not usable. Semantic interoperability delivers the assurance that what I send is something that you can use.
If we look at the next 4 or 5 years down the road in healthcare IT, it seems like, well, I'm optimistic. I think they're going to solve the problems and move on. Each different state's going to have to do it differently, and there's going to I think NIST is going to play a key role in many of these organizations trying to develop their health information exchange. Am I just giving too much value to NIST?
No,
I mean,
absolutely.
They set the standards, and state's going to have to look to NIST to find out how to do things.
NIST is working on a right now. They have an acquisition out there for the health information testing tools infrastructure, HITI. That's pre-award. It has not been awarded yet, but that really seeks to help NIST move into the next generation as far as providing those tools. And we're anxious to see, and we'll follow NIST as they go through that procurement. But NIST is involved and has a lot of outreach and works with ONC and works with HIMSS and IHE at the Connectathons. So you're absolutely right. NIST plays a crucial role in ensuring that we're following the standards and that semantic interoperability through those adoption of standards are being tested adequately by any organization looking to implement.
Your IQ just went up 10 points by saying that phrase, semantic interoperability. We'll convince someone or confuse someone about that. We're going to have to end the interview now. I'd like to thank you for coming to the studio. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Mario Hyland, Senior Vice President of a company called Aegis, AEGIS.net Incorporated. Thank you, Mario.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.